You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Hey-ho, dear listeners, and welcome into the Daily Detroit Happy Hour podcast. I am your host, Sven Gustafson. On today's episode, we've come to one of Detroit's finest and most iconic retail stores, Henry the Hatter. Today's episode will be a story about hats, fashion, and history. But more importantly, it's a story about the future of independent brick-and-mortar retail in downtown Detroit. As you may have heard, Daily Detroit readers, Henry the Hatter recently announced it would be closing down its beloved storefront at 1307 Broadway in Detroit after 65 years of doing business in this storefront. The news sent shockwaves around the region, which has known Henry the Hatter as a Detroit retailer going back all the way to 1893. So your intrepid Happy Hour correspondents are here today at the store to speak with Paul Wasserman. He's worked in the shop since 1972, and Paul, welcome to the Daily Detroit Happy Hour podcast.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here. It's always good to be happy.
It's always good to be happy here in your own store, right? Yeah, thanks for letting us crash.
That way, but more days than not, it does.
Yeah, well, thanks for letting us crash it. So you've been at the center of like a what could probably only be described as a media storm ever since, you know, you announced the news a week or so back that you were going to have to close down this location. What's it been like?
It's been unreal. I mean, the groundswell of support from people who have been patronizing the store for literally generations has been overwhelming and gratifying, and it's really validated what I've done for a living for the last 45 years and the way Detroiters feel about the store.
Explain for listeners who maybe aren't familiar with the story what happened. Why are you closing this location down? And we should also mention you've got a Southfield location on 10 Mile and Greenfield.
Yes, and they'll continue to be open. And the closing is not of my choosing. There was a mutual termination clause in our lease this year, which would have died a natural death next August. And I wrote the landlords a letter in March telling them I had no intention of using my exit clause and that I instead wanted to talk about extending the lease and continuing to stay here. And I got a letter back, not from them, but from their attorney, saying not only do we not want to extend you, but we in fact do want to terminate you. And at the end of August, you're gone. It was just that cut and dried.
Wow. And have you attempted to make contact with the landlord to ask, you know, why or to plead your case or anything?
No, I really haven't. I truly feel that it's their building. They have the right to do with it whatever they see fit. And it's up to them. I'll hopefully land on my feet.
Yeah. So has this been something that's been kind of brewing for a long time? I mean, this was out of the blue.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, but it wasn't a case where rent was climbing and pinching you and getting more and more uncomfortable or anything like that?
No, rent is affordable, and there was never any mention of a new and different rent. You know, not we're going to double your rent, we're going to triple your rent. Simply, we don't want you here.
Really?
So, yeah, I'm mystified. I don't know. And they have not been available for comment, and they have not answered phone calls, and I don't know.
Hmm. Oh, wow.
So, you'd wanted, as you said, to keep operating a business here. You had been giving no thought to closing down this location. It wasn't a thing of the rent squeezing you out.
No, not at all. Not at all. I'm still mystified, and I would be very grateful if they would come forward and if not necessarily talk to me, talk to somebody. It's one of the great mysteries that I've encountered. Yeah. I just don't know.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the history of Henry the Hatter. I have a hat that I bought here. I wore it into the store today. And
it's great on you, too. I just wish we were on television so everybody could see.
Well, that's nice of you to say, especially since, you know, a previous guest said I had a face for radio. So, yeah, I do appreciate it.
You and I are not too different, though.
Yeah. Okay. But so one of my favorite things about this hat is it's got the, what do you call this on the underside of the hat inside?
That's a tip sticker, and essentially it's doing what it's supposed to do, and that's absorb the oil from the top of your head so it doesn't discolor the hat.
And definitely done that and with my head, that's for sure. But my favorite thing is the really distinctive logo and kind of that sort of, I know it's not gold leaf, but that's kind of the effect. And it's got the guy with the monocle and the high hat. And it says Henry the Hatter, Detroit's exclusive hatter since 1893. So 19th century this store has been in existence. Tell us the history.
Okay, Henry's.
There's a lot there.
Yeah, there is. This is our third incarnation in downtown Detroit. Mm-hmm. We've always been essentially in this area. The first store was on Gratiot, where CompuWare's parking is now, and it was there for 40 years. Mm. And I saw one picture of the store, and it was kind of a galleria setting, and it was on Tumblr, I believe it was, and it was out of the Eastman Gallery, you know, from Eastman Kodak, and I contacted them, let them know who I was and that I was still in business, and for a very reasonable fee, they sent me a copy of the picture, and I showed it to some friends, and they kidded me and said, you know, it looks like you're still using the same hats in the window.
So
they built Crowley's in the mid-30s, and Henry had to relocate.
Crowley's, an iconic name in Detroit, yesteryear retail Detroit. Yeah.
Once upon a time, we had Hudson's, Kearns, Crowley's, all in downtown Detroit, and, you know, those days are long gone. So we had to relocate, and the second store was just on the other side of the alley where the Z-Lot is now, also on Gratiot Avenue. And we were there from the mid-30s.
Basically just around the corner.
Yeah, exactly, around the corner from the mid-30s until 1951, 52, when they built a much smaller parking deck than the Z-Lot is. And my dad, by that time, had come from New York, bought the business from Henry's widow and junior partner, and was faced with what I'm faced with now, moving the store.
Yeah.
And he found the location we're in now, and we've been here since 1952. Mm-hmm. It's a good story how my dad came to buy the store.
Please indulge us.
Okay. He was in the hat business in New York, and like pretty much every other American, got called away to serve in World War II. And when he came back, he was hoping to expand in New York and was unable to find any place to go. He heard about the opportunity in Detroit.
And he was already in the hat business.
Yeah, he had a hat store on 86th and York, which is on the Upper East Side of New York, called Brody's Hats. And back then, everybody traveled by train. And the way you would go from New York to Detroit and the other way around would be you'd board the train 8 o'clock at night in a sleeper car, and 8 o'clock in the morning, if you left from New York, you'd be in Detroit. If you left from Detroit, you'd be back in New York. And he took the train to the train station on Michigan Avenue that's still kind of there, and he got in a cab. At that time, there were two locations. There was the Gratiot Avenue store, and there was one on Lafayette Avenue that's now the community garden. It used to be the Lafayette building. And he got in the cab and said to the cab driver, take me to Henry the Hatter, and purposely didn't give an address just to get a response. The cab driver said, which one? So my dad was off and running, and he bought the store on the spot. I was an infant in Brooklyn. My mom was pregnant with my sister. Back then, there was no instant communication of any kind, and my dad had to take the long trip home and tell my mother exactly what he had done. And it was a colossal, monumental fight that, thankfully, I was too young to have any recollection of. But we came, and...
Your mother didn't want to move.
No. And... they did come, and my parents had a wonderful life here, and the business has thrived. And interestingly, if somebody would have sat me down in the late 70s to early 80s and given me a list of all the businesses in Detroit that would have been gone and telling me that mine would still be here, I wouldn't have believed it in a million years.
Yeah.
But here we are.
Here you are. So you're essentially the fourth owner now of the business.
Yeah, I'm Henry IV. I guess that's true. Another interesting thing, in the Jewish religion, you're named after a relative who is no longer living. And my middle name was for my maternal great-grandfather, and his name was Henry. And I was born in 1947. My dad didn't hear of this place until the following year. So I guess I wound up where I'm supposed to be.
That's great.
That's great. So now you joined the family business at the time, right, in 1972?
72, I started doing it seriously. When I was a small child, anytime I had a day off school, I'd get up way earlier than I'm used to getting up and get in the car with my dad and come down to the store and be in everybody's way who was working here, pretty much break every piece of machinery I put my hands on, and they were very happy to see me go until the next time I showed up and did the same thing again.
Yeah. What do you remember about downtown? What was it like in 1972? I mean, this is 5 years after the, you know, the events of that famous summer. We're about to have the anniversary, you know, the Detroit Rebellion, riot, whatever people want to call it.
Well, 72, the kind of radical, superfly, hippie revolution was in full gear. The regalia of the day were, you know, platform shoes with glass heels and long maxi coats and afro hairdos. There's a picture of me with Coleman Young, and I had my own version hanging on the wall over there. And the hats were extremely colorful, very, very wide-brimmed, very, very high quality at what in today's terms would be considered very affordable price. And it was extremely lively down here. You know, people would double park in the street on Saturday, you know, with no threat of a traffic ticket. And it was, you know, pretty much every Saturday was like Christmas, and you were worn out at the end of the day from doing so much business.
Yeah.
And at that time, we had a full factory upstairs. A lot of what we sold on the shelves was made right upstairs. So we would take inventory, see what we sold, send the work order to the factory on Monday. And, you know, by Thursday afternoon, Friday morning, the hats for the next weekend were finished and on the shelf.
Mm-hmm. Does Henry the Hatter still make hats?
No, we haven't in some time. And there is no new hat equipment. And as a consequence, the equipment we had, it turned out, was very, very valuable. And, you know, the last bit of equipment I sold off was a tandem of crown irons that probably weighed a couple of tons that I thought I was going to have to pay somebody to take out of here. And it turns out, not only did I not, they paid me and took them out. They're very valuable.
Okay. So it's interesting. You mentioned the style of hats that were in favor back in the 70s. You sort of remember the various eras of history, I would suppose, by the kind of hats people bought.
Kind of, sort of, yeah. 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 The Secretary of State, I believe, during Eisenhower's term as president was James Farley, and my dad somehow knew him from New York. He even told me a story that he went out on a blind date with who was eventually going to be James Farley's wife, and it never worked out for a variety of reasons, one being she was at least a head taller than he was. So when Eisenhower was preaching austerity because the country was in tough shape in the mid-50s, instead of being inaugurated in a top hat, he was inaugurated in a Homburg, and Farley somehow connected with my dad, and Eisenhower was inaugurated in our Homburg.
And describe a Homburg. What is that?
It's got a crease in the center and a rolled brim. And if you think of Winston Churchill, that's the type of hat that he wore. If you think of Coleman Young in his heyday, that's the kind of hat that he wore. And it's a very distinguished look.
Yeah. Interesting. You're listening to the Daily Detroit Happy Hour podcast. We are talking with Paul Wasserman, who is the owner of Henry the Hatter. He recently announced that the store will be closing its Detroit location after 65 years in the same spot. The Southfield location will remain open, and a search is underway for a new location, which we'll get to. But let's talk about, been a lot of famous customers in this coming through the doors here in your time. Who do you remember? Like, any funny stories about...
Well, George Clinton still comes in. Kid Rock used to come in here before anybody knew who the heck he was. Mm-hmm. I've known him for 20 years. Jack White comes in. Jeff Daniels comes in. Mike Epps, the comedian, comes in. Steve Harvey has been in. I'm doing some things for Hank Williams Jr. now. And he's interesting to work with. He got my name and number from Kid Rock. And I get a call one day shortly after having gotten my first and only smartphone, and friends had told me that you're going to get a lot of crank calls now that you have a smartphone. Mm-hmm. So after that lunch, I'm home, and the phone rings, and I look on the caller ID, and it's Paris, Tennessee. And I go, I don't know anybody from Paris, Tennessee. This person's going to get a piece of my mind. Mm-hmm. And I say hello, and then on the other end, hi, it's Hank Williams Jr. Got your number from Kid Rock, and I'm doing a tribute album to my father. I'd like you to see if you can get some hats made in the same style that he wore.
Wow.
And I did. And, he and I, would text back and forth from time to time. And when he was on the CMTs, not this past year, but the prior year, I'm opening the store on Wednesday morning, which traditionally I do. Mm-hmm. And the phone rings. It's before the store opened, and it was Hank to call me and tell me, please watch me tonight on the CMTs. I'm the first act, and I'm wearing your hat, and I just wanted to let you know that. So, it knocked me out that somebody in that stratosphere would take the time to call me.
Yeah,
and I watched, and it was my hat.
That's incredible. And we should mention, too, that you guys lay claim to being, the oldest hat store in
the country? We are. We absolutely are. Yeah. And the second oldest is in New Orleans, and we're only a year older than them.
Wow.
You know, the feather in their cap, so to speak, is that theirs has been in one family the whole time. Mine has been in two families.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sort of curious, why do you think that the news about the store closing has struck such a nerve? I mean, obviously you're talking about a lot of celebrities. The place is really well known.
Well,
but
the celebrities are fabulous, but what really keeps the store going, kept the store going, are multi-generational Detroiters who have come in, and they have taken a personal affront as if something is happening to them, not to me, to them. How dare these people take away the place that I used to come with my father and my grandfather and brought my child for their first hat and is such an integral part of Detroit? Don't they know who you are and what you mean to us? And it's knocked me out. It's just absolutely knocked me out. And it really has validated what I've done for a living for the past 45 years. It's in kind of a weird, good way. It's like being a guest at your own funeral and finding out what people really think about you and being able to walk away with a smile instead of going, I wish I would have done that a little differently.
Having shopped here a couple of times, I can, also attest, it's a different kind of a retail experience. I mean, as I stand here over the counter, I look around, it's, there's paper receipts everywhere. I don't see a computer or an iPad in sight. It's like the opposite of, you go to an iPad store or an Apple store and everything's gleaming and sleek and minimalist. This is sort of cluttered. There's no technology. There's brushes and it's tactile and there's a smell to the hats.
It's hands-on. And the neon sign in front, I can't tell you how much money I've spent to maintain that sign, and there have been suggestions over the years. Well, why don't you upgrade? You'll save a lot of money. It's really a big part of who I am, and I'm very, very hopeful that I'll be able to take it with me if and when I find a new location. I think it's, part and parcel of who we are.
Yeah, absolutely. And, 65 years you've been is a long time anywhere, but especially here in Detroit. I mean, you persisted through some incredibly lean times downtown, right? I mean, how did you survive?
When I was a small child, there used to be a policeman on the corner. That's how much foot traffic there was. And after Hudson's was imploded, I think it closed in the early 80s. I think it was imploded in the early 90s. We were literally the only storefront that was open and operating for a number of years. And in 2005, 2006, we had the All-Star Game Super Bowl. And I went to a meeting where they were talking about doing a streetscape on Broadway, which they did. And in their plans was that Broadway is three blocks long. We're going to start at Grand Circus Park, and 2 weeks on this block, 2 weeks on this block, 2 weeks on the third block, and then back the other way. And it would be a 12-week project, and two lanes, one in each direction, would be open all the time. 9 months later, there were still 9-foot-high rock and gravel piles in front of the store.
Yeah.
And amazingly, we did business. And in retrospect, looking back on the sales figures, they weren't terrible.
Yeah.
They weren't terrible.
And so now Detroit's on a pretty remarkable upswing. Downtown Detroit is. How's that been for business?
It's wonderful to see. On Friday and Saturday, between 4 and 6, there's such an influx of people, obviously from the suburbs, who are looking to rediscover Detroit. Mm-hmm. And they're either downtown in the winter for a hockey game, in the summer for a baseball game, or maybe to go to a concert or just to a restaurant. And they want to see what's here. Mm-hmm. And, we're a part of what's here. And a lot of people come in and, well, I've never been. I just wanted to see it. And we're happy to see anybody and everybody. But people have been buying things, which is also very, very nice.
Yeah. Have hats always remained in style, though, or they've kind of ebbed and flowed?
No. For a long time, they were not cool at all. And presently, I've got two different businesses going. There's people who want to look like James Cagney and Humphrey Bogart, and that's their traditional side of the business with fancy cut and sewn Italian and English goods. And what happened about 10 years ago is that entertainers and musicians started putting hats on, and all of a sudden they became cool. The hat that you're wearing is a stingy brim, which was initially popular in the mid-60s. If you see pictures of Malcolm X in his heyday, if you see pictures of Muhammad Ali when he was still Cassius Clay, before things really got out of hand in the late 60s, the stingy brim was the style, but now they're more colorful and edgy. And I've got the fun side of the business with the younger demographic as well as the traditional side, and it keeps me on my toes, and it's a lot more fun.
Yeah. What are some of the big sellers nowadays? What's in vogue? I mean, you mentioned stingy brim, yeah.
You're right on the money there.
Yeah.
And in caps, it's the more closely fitting caps called the pub cap or the pub cap or the ivy cap, but the close fitting caps are really what's in fashion now.
So you've been getting offers, you mentioned earlier, from landholders, real estate brokers, for new spaces around the city.
Yeah, since last Thursday, Friday, I've probably looked at a space every day from prominent developers. And most of them, really, the ulterior motive is to keep me in Detroit rather than to see how much rent they can extract from me. And I'm looking at some wonderful space being offered at a discount because people truly want me to remain in Detroit. And it's my goal, wherever I wind up, to be as close physically to this address as I possibly can be. And, there's still a lot of numbers to crunch. Some spaces need a lot of work. Some spaces don't need a lot of work. Some are too big. Some are too small. And, kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears, one of the chairs is going to be just right.
Yeah.
And I don't know which chair that is yet.
Right. At the same time, you're 70 years old. A lot of people your age would probably just say, I'm done. It's retirement time anyway. I mean, how long do you want to keep doing it?
Well, what I want to do is I want to get a Detroit location up and running. Joe Rankevich, who's been with me since January of 1985, is my successor. He's 15 years my junior. We've talked about, do you want one store or do you want a presence in Detroit? And he said that he absolutely wants a presence in Detroit. So I'm making it my business. This may be my swan song. To make it a smooth transition and say, here you are, Joe. You have a store in Detroit as well as the one in Southfield. You have my blessings. I'll work when you need me, but I think it's time for me to work less. And that's my ultimate game plan.
And so remind our listeners of your closing date, how long you'll be open.
Well, the last day we're open for business is August 5th. We have four stories in the building, and there's things I literally don't know are here that I'm going to have to go through and sort out what I keep, what we throw away. And I think 3 weeks is probably the right amount of time to sift through the things, and hopefully by then we'll know where we're going to move, what we're going to move, and you know, continue to operate as Henry the Hatter. I don't think it'll be close August 31st here and open September 1st somewhere else. I don't think that's physically doable, but I think with all the interest, I think I'll be answering questions and people are going to want to know.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to seeing what happens, and we hope for the best for you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your interest. I appreciate you coming.
Absolutely. Paul Wasserman is the fourth owner, representing the second family ownership of Henry the Hatter in downtown Detroit. Thanks so much for coming on the Happy Hour podcast.
Thank you, Sven. I appreciate it a lot.
Hey, Happy Hour podcast fans. We're coming to you free each week, but we'd like to grow this little project of ours, and we'd like to ask you for your support. For just $5 a month, you can support this podcast and all the great content on Daily Detroit. And in exchange, we'll send you a t-shirt bearing the distinctive Daily Detroit crest designed by Mishara Walker. Visit dailydetroit.com and click on the membership tab at the top of the page. Our thanks today goes out to Henry the Hatter and Paul Wasserman for hosting us here, to Podcast Detroit, our network, and thank you for listening. Until next week, be well, do good work, and take care of one another. So long.
You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.